words. You ready? Are you ready? It's Monday, and you know what? We have a sing-along. How you feeling? Feeling better? We won! You and me, we did. Good guys won. America won. Yeah, and we're going to celebrate that and make sure that everybody is aware of that. But hang on a second, everybody. I have even more breaking news here. Looks like we may have a vaccine. This is breaking right now. The drug maker Pfizer, you've heard of them. You have any prescription medication in your medicine cabinet, could be that they came from Pfizer, P-F-I-Z-E-R. They're announcing that an early analysis of their coronavirus vaccine trial suggests the vaccine was robustly effective in preventing COVID-19. That's a promising development. The world's been waiting anxiously. We've had more than 1.2 million people on the word killed by the pandemic. Pfizer, which developed the vaccine with the German drug maker BioNTech, released only sparse details from its clinical trial, which is based on the first formal review of the data by an outside panel of experts. So this is early on in reporting what's happening here, and as I'm telling you, I'm probably reading mostly what is the condensation of Pfizer's press release. Companies said that the analysis found that the vaccine was more than 90% effective in preventing the disease among trial volunteers who had no evidence of prior coronavirus infection. Now, if the results hold up, that level of protection would put it on par with the highly effective childhood vaccines that we are all used to, vaccines for diseases like measles. So far, no serious safety concerns have been observed. Pfizer plans to ask the Food and Drug Administration for emergency authorization of the two-dose vaccine later this month after it's collected the recommended 2 months of safety data. By the end of the year, it says it will have manufactured enough doses to immunize 15 to 20 million people, and that is according to Pfizer's top executives. Should I repeat that? It's 9:06 in Chicago. It's 6 minutes after the hour, wherever you are. Drug maker Pfizer announced today that an early analysis of its coronavirus vaccine trial suggested the vaccine was working, highly effective. So there you go. All right. Well, my job's done. I read the good news here. We have some other good news that broke over the weekend. Did you hear about it? Ladies and gentlemen, Kamala Devi Harris.
So, Congressman John Lewis, before his passing, wrote, "Democracy is not a state, it is an act." And what he meant was that America's democracy is not guaranteed. It is only as strong as our willingness to fight for it. To guard it and never take it for granted. And protecting our democracy takes struggle. It takes sacrifice. But there is joy in it. And there is progress. Because we, the people, have the power to build a better future. And when our very democracy was on the ballot in this election, with the very soul of America at stake, and the world watching, you ushered in a new day for America.
Honk, honk, honk.
To our campaign staff and volunteers, this extraordinary team, thank you for bringing more people than ever before into the democratic process. And for making this victory possible, to the poll workers and election officials across our country who have worked tirelessly to make sure every vote is counted, our nation owes you a debt of gratitude. You have protected the integrity of our democracy. And to the American people who make up our beautiful country, thank you for turning out in record numbers to make your voices heard.
There you go. Honk, honk. I love the honking. That is the Vice President-elect, Kamala Harris. Yeah, wow. You know what? With your permission, I just thought I'd sort of pontificate this morning. I've been getting up for 6 months here, and every morning I have to look at the news, which has been driven by the guy with the orange hair, and try to figure out, you know, what today, and you know, what part of it is irrelevant, and what part of it is dangerous to avoid, and all of that stuff. You know what? I'm so relieved. That's my emotion today. I am really relieved. We're on to a new era here. It was great to listen to Kamala Harris. I believe that she will be the 47th president of the United States at some point. And what a melting pot her whole life has been, and what a symbol of really what America is all about. I'm just really happy to hear more about her and know more about her. And, you know, Joe Biden, I at the beginning of this whole process, I thought, you know, he's kind of a little bit older than me, another old white guy, and, you know, kind of a journeyman, workaday politician. I didn't think he was a very exciting guy, but you know, he hung in there, and they did it. They got elected. But I have to say, now I see where we are, which is that he is ready to land with his feet running. He knows the machinery of government. You know, I was thinking about, Pete Buttigieg been elected, or Andrew Yang, both people that I thought were interesting. You know what? At this point, they would be having to figure it out. Biden has been in politics forever. And, reading all the stuff about him, not that I didn't know his story, he is a good man. And even George W. Bush said that. He's already got the coronavirus team together. They have a couple of people, former Surgeon General appointed, former FDA commissioner appointed. The list of probable cabinet members is great. And, I took a breath today. Let me say another thing. Do you mind? I'm going to use a term that you may not have thought that you were a part of, that it did not describe you. You ready? It's a dirty word. Media. But you know what? You're on Facebook? Do you have Instagram? Do you have a Twitter account? You ever do that stuff? That you're part of the media. That's what has really changed. That is what has changed in the last few years. And I ranked out the conventional media last week and a couple of times before that. It seems to me that when they finally pulled the plug on this crazy, lying, maniacal excuse for a human being last week, that was a long time coming. And I was waiting for everybody to just, okay, just like I just said, you know, I'm feeling better. I don't have to come up and process it every morning. And then I look at the news. What's the story today? From the media, not you and me, that Trump hasn't conceded yet. And we're now going to be waiting to see what happens. You know what? I don't care. I just don't care. What an insult. What an insult. You and I, we voted. The election's over, Jack. Sit down and shut up. We're done. Anyway, yeah, you're not going to hear anything from me. We're not going to spend any more time than we have to. These legal challenges are nonsense. They're not going to go anywhere. And you've got a guy who has to, whether he's going to concede or not right now is the least of his problems. He is facing at the moment on noon on the 20th of January, when he ceases to be the sitting president of the United States, he's going to be a guy who just had his clothes ripped off because he has so many legal vulnerabilities, so many questions. He's being pursued by everybody from the state of New York on tax stuff to fraud charges and all kinds of shenanigans with a bunch of attorneys general. And the guy's broke. He may have people bankrolling him, but he's broke, so. I think I've said enough about him. Let's talk about the new era here. And I think it's going to be an exciting time. I think we're going to put some stuff back together. Biden has already announced that we're going to rejoin the Paris Climate Accords and a lot of other stuff. And as I said, you know, this is a guy who knows the people, who knows the people. To know that the Obama folks are involved and that everybody, with the exception of a few troglodytes who are on their way out from the Republican Party, with the exception of, I think, a minority of people, we really have a crack at it right now. So that's what I think. Yeah. Oh, boy. You know what? I thought I would play just feel-good stuff today. We've got some stuff coming up. Alex Trebek passed away. Bad news, but you know what? I'm going to take some time. I actually met Mr. Trebek, and we have some thoughts about him. A friend of mine also knew him. We'll talk about that a little bit today. So that's something as we move forward here. We're going to interview an artist. What kind of a radio show do you have when you interview artists? Well, her name is Vanessa, and she paints. We're going to talk to her today, and at some point we'll join the the mind of Aaron the News Baron and see what's cooking on his political front. So all of that going on, and then I was looking about this. Let's cue up some feel-good music. I have some late-breaking election news. It was so busy on Friday, I couldn't get to this. You ready? A French bulldog named Wilbur has been elected mayor of a small town in Kentucky. He's already a celebrity. He's had a lot of pets, a lot of belly scratches, and a lot of ear rubs. So congrats to Wilbur. Doesn't say what party he represented. Could have been libertarian.
Can't you hear that pitter-pat? Yes, happy tune, your step, baby. Life can be so sweet on Sunday side of the street. I just walk in shit, baby, walk with those blues on red. I'm not afraid, just never have a cent. I'll be rich as Rockefeller, Noza, gold dust at my feet on Sunside Street.
You know, we play Louis Armstrong every day on the show to close, and the only problem is that's the only song we ever hear is the one that we play. So I thought we'd pull out some other stuff. That's him doing the Sunny Side of the Street. And it's feeling pretty sunny here in America where I am. It's 19 after the hour. It's Gary Lee Wright on the Pandemic Pirate Radio Show from Bleat.network. And we join News Baron Aaron. Good morning, sir. Did you get any sleep? He's still exciting. Was that you honking? And the Kamala Harris tape there, was that your horn in the back there?
Good morning, Gary.
Good morning.
I unfortunately wasn't able to be there, but I was there in spirit.
Okay, let me see if I can get your volume up. There we go. It's on me.
Okay.
It's on me. There we go. So listen, I thought we'd hit a couple of quick things if we could. I was evaluating all these all the stats and my. I woke up in the middle of the night realizing that I've now memorized that Alaska has 3 electoral votes. So my life's pretty much done now. So we think what? It looks like he's going to that Biden will get that they will reverse the outcome from 2016. I think that's what it looked to me like. That if we give Trump Alaska and North Carolina, then I think that is the same as Hillary's losing total 4 years ago. I think that's the...
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. It was basically the 2016 race.
Yeah.
But in 2016, the independent swung for Donald Trump. The opposite happened this year.
All right. So I thought I would ask you about this. And listen, before we, I need to sort of put a disclaimer on this. What I am about to reveal, I read this morning and last night, which is to say I know nothing about the Libertarian Party. I'm not announcing my candidacy.
Same.
I'm not suggesting that anybody join it. But... I have to tell you, Aaron, we're going to talk about Alex Trebek later today. I'm going to give you a quiz. Can you name the political party that is pro-choice, wants to legalize prostitution, is against anything that would be described as a victimless crime? They only think that government should be there to prevent force or fraud, and other than that, they should get the hell out of the way. Can you name that party?
Communists.
Very funny. No, it's not the communists. It's the libertarians. And the reason that I thought this was interesting, as we've been crunching the numbers in the last few days here, I kept seeing, and I don't have this figure. I don't know how many ballots the libertarians were on, but they're going to clock 1 million votes. And they are leading or were leading or led, they had more votes in some of these contested races than the margin that Biden led by. So, yeah. So what about the libertarians? Aaron, were they on your radar? I should mention Jo Jorgensen, the woman who was this year's presidential candidate was born in Libertyville.
Right.
Wow. So anyway, what about it?
Was Rand Paul a libertarian?
I think so.
I don't know.
But I'm not sure. The thing with libertarians, it isn't like you got a tattoo, you know, or a card that you whip out. Can I see your libertarian ID? No, it doesn't. It's sort of like where they are. But I thought so. The question was, and the reason I got thinking about this, so if you look at these poll figures or the voting count, for example, let's see here. As of Thursday, the campaign achieved one more than 1.6 million votes. Wow. As of Friday, and I get this, man, because they have not dealt out Georgia yet. As of Friday, Jorgensen had more than 61,000 votes in the state of Georgia, and the difference between Trump and Biden is only 1,600. So, yeah. So anyway,
interesting.
You might wonder what party suffered at the hands of the libertarians, and I would have thought it was Trump, right?
Right. But I would agree with that.
But then I said, well, wait a minute. They're pro-choice. They're this. They're that. So I don't know. You have a comment about that? Because we may need a third party here. One may spring up here. What's that make?
Yeah,
you
that's very
about?
True. I think maybe this election cycle, the libertarians kind of got the Trump effect from 2016,
right,
where they didn't like either of the options, so they just thought, well, I'll just vote for Jorgensen. But maybe there's something deeper to that that I'm not giving them more credit for. But I would think most people who consider themselves recently libertarians, they really just think about small government, fewer taxes, more autonomy personally. So I would think that a lot of that vote would come from the Republican Party.
Right.
But I think a lot of the times also anti-Biden, anti-Trump, or anti-Hillary, it was just anti-establishment.
Yeah, I agree with
a
that.
A lot of people just... don't like the establishment, yeah. Democrats or Republican parties.
I figure a number of people probably just walked into a vote. Listen, when I was a kid, I remember, I think this was one of the first elections I was legally allotted to vote in, and I think I voted socialist worker. I just was, I don't know, I walked in there, I thought, sure, that looks good. But I'm thinking when I look at, you know, the ballot in general, people may have gone in and said, oh, wait, here's one. I'll just check libertarian without really even knowing who they're voting for. I don't want to say that there are people that do that. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. Jorgensen is a lecturer at Clemson University. She has a PhD in psychology. And anyway, that's all I knew about that. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So, but let me ask you about the people who won, if we could. What's your feeling? I felt relief this morning. What did you feel over the weekend?
Well, it was a long election come down, so it was just emotions were all over the place. And we figured out who it was. I was very happy, very very relieved. Trump did get 5 million more votes in 2020 than 2016, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And then we talked off the air about the losing of some of the congressional seats and Senate seats. So that's a little interesting. But overall, I'm extremely, as you said earlier in the show, relieved.
Were you surprised that I think Trump took Ohio by 8 points? Is that right?
Yes.
I did not see that coming. Not that I'm a pundit of any kind, but I thought that was pretty. I mean, we had the blue wall of Pennsylvania, which he flipped, Michigan, which he flipped, Wisconsin, which he flipped. But Ohio did a handstand in the other direction. So what do you make of that?
I think that's reflective of a greater trend. If you look at the polls, and we can talk about the polling inaccuracies another day,
because
that's a whole other thing. But Trump was consistently beating each poll in the majority of the states by like 5-6 points. He outperformed the polls while they strangely accurately predicted the vote turnout for Biden. So I think it's not like across the board they just shifted the median point over. Right. They just accurately predicted Biden, not Trump, which is, I don't know what you could chalk that up to, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is very puzzling. There's a thing that I sent you a note on this. There's an article somewhere that says Biden defeated Trump, but not Trumpism. Mm. And I don't even know what that is. I mean, I can speculate on what that is.
Right.
But the word Trumpism, what are we talking about? What is that? When I say to you Trumpism, what's the first, what comes to your mind? Do you break into a sweat or what do you think?
I run for cover.
Yeah.
No, but the first thing is anti-establishment. And then there's always those undertones of the social and racial differences there. But when I think Trumpism, I just think anti-establishment, because a lot of people just chose. I think at the end of the day, he won and he was successful in many of the things he tried to do in controlling the narrative, saying so many lies that media couldn't keep up, that a lot of people just started to believe everything he said and didn't really take things at face value. I think he was very successful at contorting people's perception of what he was achieving in office and what he stood for in office. And I think that was a success on his part.
Yeah, it's weird. Boy, riddle me this one, Batman. So the counties with the highest COVID in the country all went Trump. They all went big red. I do not understand. So pass me the Kool-Aid, would you? I mean, it's just this stuff is inexplicable. It's coming up on 29 after the hour here. This is Aaron, the News Baron, and I should mention for folks that maybe you were off the last few weeks here, Aaron is now also the Science Baron. And honest,
that's my twin brother.
That's right. And honest to God, you know we've got. I mean, I should mention now the new First Lady is a doctor. Mrs. Biden is a pediatrician. Biden is a heavy pro-science guy, and they've already started, I think, to reverse the denial of science as a concept, which is kind of like denying math or something. Or you know, I just add those two numbers. I don't know how to do that. It's like anyway. So I felt pretty good. So we're gonna get back. We are gonna get back. Aaron and I will probably. Our gift to you is probably not talking about politics every day. We'll talk about some other stuff. And today is Carl Sagan's birthday. So there you go.
Really?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Really? Didn't know that.
Yeah, and there was a lot going on here. It's also Spiro Agnew, but we left him out of the other ring. So yeah, all right. So far so good. And let's just monitor what's going on here. Any possibility that these votes were counted wrong?
Honestly, I think in this election, out of all of them, no state wants to be called in that position. So I think things ran pretty smoothly, honestly. As I was keeping track throughout the days of the counts coming in, I think things ran pretty smooth and pretty accurately. Everything was on tape. They had cameras set up in most of these voting counting locations. They had people from the Democrat and Republican side watching them. This election specifically, things went surprisingly well. Even better than the primary in Iowa when there was that big hullabaloo. But I think it's all a bunch of BS trying to spread negativity at the process.
I agree with you. And I think that this, if for what it's worth, this is the most transparent election that I remember. It is. And I go back. It's odd. This is the anniversary of John Kennedy being elected in 1960. There absolutely was vote fraud in that election. It was here in Chicago, and it may have put him over the line. So I'm saying it's not like I don't know that. It's not like we never heard of vote fraud. It's just there wasn't any of this in this election.
Right.
So yeah. Anyway, all right, feeling pretty good about that. So, Aaron, take the rest of the year off.
Will do.
We got a request for this song. Here it is.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose? The lights are much brighter there. You can't forget all your troubles, forget all your cares. So go downtown. Things will be great when you're downtown. No final place for sure. Don't hang around and let your problems surround you. There are movie shows downtown. Maybe you know some little places to go to where they never close. Downtown, just listen to the rhythm of a gentle bossa nova. You'll be dancing with them too before the night is over. Happy again. The light's so much brighter. You can't forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go downtown, where all the lights are bright, downtown, waiting for you tonight, downtown, you're gonna be alright now, downtown, downtown, troubles, forget all our cares, so go downtown. Things will be great when you're downtown. Don't wait a minute more, downtown. Everything's waiting for you.
Petula Clark, from way back when. As we head downtown and wake up wherever you are this morning, it's 26 before the hour on Pandemic Pirate Radio from Chicago at bleat.network. Lots going on here. Interesting stuff in history, interesting stuff all over the world, and a really interesting chance for me right now to talk to somebody who I have been eager to meet. Her name is Vanessa. She's a painter. She does beautiful paintings, and we have her on the phone right now from Puerto Rico. Hi, Vanessa.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. I just said to you off the air here Puerto Rico voted for independence last week, and it wasn't reported anywhere up here. But
we have some elections, so local elections, and one of the choices was to choose if you want to be a state or if you're part of the United States or if you want independence. But the majority vote that they want to be part of the United States, so I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's what happened.
Nobody said they want to be a part of Russia, right? It was more of, it was either.
Yeah,
all right, okay.
It's up to the Congress now.
Yeah, it is. Well, 51st state. I've got no problem with that at all. So, yeah. Well, listen, this is an experimental radio show, and we experiment every morning. And you don't have a lot of artists interviewed on radio. So I thought that would be an interesting challenge to start with, to try to describe some of your paintings. And this is kind of what you call a COVID series, right, what you've been working on, Vanessa?
Oh, yes. Since it started the pandemic in March, because we were in lockdown as well as everyone else.
Right.
Most artists, we were all locked in their houses and trying to figure out what we do, and I was lucky that I have a lot of canvases empty, and many of them that I have repainted and recycled them. And I said, well, might as well just paint what's going on, and I document, this historic moment. So I embarked myself into this adventure, I say, because I didn't know how they're going to turn out, and I start painting what I saw. One thing that impacted me was when I went for food shopping one day. The queue was like 200 people,
yeah.
And we had to have 6 feet distance with the trolleys. And I was in the shopping cart, and it impacted me. And I said, look at this. We look like astronauts, and we are dressed up in weird ways with masks and shields and gloves at that time and sanitizer. This is like crazy. And I came home, and I started making sketches. And then I came up with these women carrying shopping carts in distance. And then later on, I put people running desperate, because you get anxiety when you're locked down. We are not human beings. I think we're not prepared to be inside all the time. We still have to interact socially. So I started painting what I felt and how I see people. I was calm because I always work at home in my painting. So for me, reclusion was nothing wrong. But I can see other artists, I can look in the internet, and they were desperate. And I think I tried to pass in that desperation that other people were living around me. And that's what I did. All these people holding their heads, all these people having dinner, all inside a house, or people trying to go to the bank with their money, with the distance, all that stuff, all that pandemic series is all what I was experiencing at the time. And I have to say that I was the first one in Puerto Rico who started tackling the subject, because most people didn't want to paint it.
Yeah.
Because they were thinking of money. They were thinking, why will I paint someone with a mask? I'm not going to sell that. But I couldn't care. I had to paint. I had to work. I had to get it out.
Vanessa, you're a real artist, I got to say. Your stuff spoke to me. Listen, at the risk of, as I just said to you right before we went on the air, artists don't like to be compared to other artists. I like surrealism, and some of your stuff looked to me a little bit like Salvador Dali or Magritte. Does that offend you, or what do you think?
Doesn't offend me. No, I took a lot of inspiration from Magritte and my early works. And Dalí was not really my inspiration. It was more the women artists from the after-war, like Leonora Carrington,
yeah,
and Remedios Varo, Leonor Fini, women like that, like Dorothea Tanning, who painted things that were magical. And I was attracted to that. And I realized that I was doing works that they were similar to people. I started making paintings that I didn't know they look described in that term of surrealism, because I was just a student. I didn't know about, the classifications.
Right.
And people start comparing me when I look at the works of those women. Then I realized how much similarity I had, that I was trying to express things that were similar, and didn't realize my painting was surreal, what they call surreal.
And so, you're in a surreal time,
and
more than any other time. Yeah.
So. we are living in surreal times, and I think it's perfect. It matches exactly, you know, all these things. Sometimes I paint my dreams as well.
Yeah.
I paint things that I would like to see, and that's why they all look very magical. I came up painting all these creatures recently that they appear in my dreams. I don't know where they come from. And you have the impression that some of them look a bit childish, some of them look like a big, looking at a scene of Star Wars or something like that. But it's fun. It's fun, and I get it out, and I think someone else sees something else. The other day, I received a call from a writer that won one of those paintings for the cover of their book.
Really?
That touches me. And
yeah.
And to me, you say, well, I painted these because I saw that, and this person saw something else that matches their poetry. So that, to me, is very flattering, and it's wonderful. It's really, truly wonderful.
You have a painting here. I think it's called, I was flipping around, it's called Wilderness in the title. Do you know a painting?
Oh, yes.
This is just, I wish I could hold this up. This is the most arresting image. It's a woman who is obviously concerned and about the environment, about animals, and about all that stuff, right? I mean, it's Vanessa. Your paintings, I mean, they are surreal, but they don't need to be explained. That's what I would say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I paint. What I feel, what I got inside, and what it comes into my mind, what I dream. And I don't like to explain. I say, well, what do you see? I say the same thing as Leonardo DiCaprio used to say. Well, I see this, and I can't. That makes me think about that. I say, well, that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what, how you interpret it. And that woman, Wilderness in Extinction, is actually a self-portrait. And because I'm very concerned about environment and about species in extinction, I put it a marsupial that's already extinct from Australia, because I live in Australia for many years. I put on in there a parrot that is called the Amazon habitata, which is nearly extinct. It's the parrot from Puerto Rico. And many flower orchids that are in danger of extinction from Puerto Rico and from Australia. And I wanted to make these two words together in one painting. And also, of course, bees, because bees and the beehives in her hair.
Yeah.
It's what we most have to look after, because if we don't have bees, a lot of the food that we eat won't exist, like bananas and many others. And we depend on bats and bees for, you know, pollinating all many of the foods that we consume daily, products.
I was just going to ask you, you lived in Australia. You speak how many languages? I know you speak English and Spanish.
I live in Germany, in England, in America. In Australia for 10 years, I speak French. Spanish is my native tongue, and English. I speak three. I study other languages, but I don't. Jeez. I'm not fluent on them, but I understand. I study Portuguese and Italian, but I'm not fluent. But I speak French like a second language, and I live in France for 5 years. I was a professor.
What about Frilly around here, Vanessa? And we'll make some attempt to get some of your paintings up on our website in some fashion, which is bleat.network, and we'll make sure people can see some of these beautiful things that you've done. So what about women painting? Do women empower themselves when they paint? You're a woman painter. What about that? Women,
yes,
in all areas, women get a short shrift. What about painting?
Yeah, history has been very unfair to women, because historically, women have been virtually erased from the art scene. And we see it in the museums. You go to the museums a few years ago, and you only see paintings of men and a few paintings of female. And now all around the world, there's a movement created. In Spain, they have done it. And they have bring up all the women that they were as good as male painters. And then they have put them in the museum, like Sofonisba, Tisola, Artemisia Gentileschi, and many more. They are coming up and putting them in museums. There's so many. Here they start doing a movement in Puerto Rico as well, and they fill up the galleries now from women artists, and it's important. Me as a woman, I see that all the time. I see this constant thing in museums when you visit them, that they might be one artist, female, and the rest is men. And women, we empower with anything we do. But painting is a very, very good tool to express many of our fights You know, we've been fighting for years, yeah. for centuries, for the vote, for having equal rights, equal pay. And I did that. My last exhibition was about that. It's about equality and women's rights. And I think it was important. I'm a woman who paints women, too. And it's important for me. And I think my painting is the best tool I can use to promote that. I don't know what else to say.
We're very pro-human on this show, and we're pro-art. So we like that idea. We like that idea. Your stuff is great, Vanessa. Thanks for
thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us, and I hope you're safe and well in Puerto Rico. And come on, join the country.
And we'll see what they decide.
And bring your art. Thank you, Vanessa.
Thanks to you. Have a good day and stay safe.
Bye bye.
Bye. I should fall for grace of God, where no doctor can relieve me. If I'm buried beneath the sun, but the angels won't receive me. Let me go, boys, let me go, boys. Let me go down in the mud, the river's all dry. This land was always theirs, was the proud land of our fathers. It belongs to us and them, not to any of the others. Let them go.
Pogues, an Irish rock band. I got international talking to Vanessa there and all the languages. She's a fabulous artist, really, a wonderful painter. Thanks to her for getting up and talking to us on the phone from Puerto Rico this morning. And as I say, we'll make sure that you can see some of her stuff somewhere on the website, which is bleat.network. It's 12 before the hour. It's Gary Lee right here on Pandemic Pirate Radio from Chicago. RadioAnything@gmail.com reaches us 24/7. Please bring it on. And you can, you know, if you've got an iPhone, for example, you can easily pull out voice memo, cut the voice memo, attach it to blah, 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 blah. You can send it right over here. Or you can cut to the chase and leave me a toll-free voice memorandum at 844-220-3300. When's the last time you heard anybody say memorandum? All right. I thought we would back into this. There are a couple things happening in the world here that I wanted you to know about. On this day, I did mention this is the anniversary of JFK being elected in 1960. And Nixon did concede. The first issue of Rolling Stone came out on this day in 1967. John Lennon on the cover. Gary Kasparov was 22 when he won the 13th World Chess Championship against Anatoly Karpov on this day in 1985. There's a new movie, I think, involving Gary Kasparov. It's hard to make a movie I should talk. I just interviewed a painter on the radio. It's hard to make a movie about chess, but we'll see how they do on that. So, yeah. And Carl Sagan has a birthday today. He was an American astronomer and a planetary scientist, it says here, a cosmologist. And we'll take some time this week. I'm going to talk about some of the things that he was into. So, anyway, he does have a birthday today. He was born on this day in 1934 in Brooklyn, New York. So, all that going on. Well, I'll tell you something. You know, I like what I do. I'm lucky to have a job. God knows we're all lucky to have a job. And one of the things we're going to be doing on this show, I hope, in the next few months, is trying to help people who don't have a job find one and try to get the economy somethinged. And, we'll be that conduit of information. I hope we can do that. That would make me feel good. One of the things that's hard about this job is the occasional necessity to wake up and say that somebody who was alive yesterday is not alive today. And I think that I've gotten a little bit more better at that over the years. I realize that the end of somebody's life is it's a chance to talk about their life. So Alex Trebek died over the weekend. Alex Trebek was kind of a hero of mine. He was 80. He died of pancreatic cancer. I had a chance to meet him, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit. And I asked a couple of my friends to ring in on this. One of them is Harley Spiller. Harley was on the show. We're going to have him on the show again. Harley, well, here he is. Harley's going to explain a little bit about him and Alex, and then we'll talk a little bit more about that. Here we go. Let's see here.
Hello, Gary Lee Wright. This is Harley Judd Spiller calling in from New York City, saddened by the death of Alex Trebek, a game show host and person extraordinaire. In the 1990s, I had a run of television appearances and was on a variety of game shows and talk shows, including an appearance on To Tell the Truth, which was hosted by Alex Trebek for a short while. And he was a nice guy. He came in the green room, made sure to say hello to everybody, and I watched him change suits 10 times in one day. They filmed 2 weeks worth of episodes in one day. And I enjoyed it in large part because I won $1,000, but also because all the other gathered nut jobs were fun to be around. So thanks for asking, and condolences to the Trebeks everywhere. Thank you.
It's Harley Spiller. Harley, we're gonna have another comment from Harley. Let's. I think we need to hear this, don't we? Yeah, we do. Here he comes.
This is Gary.
No, the hair is standing on the back of my neck. That man who said that is Johnny Gilbert. He is the announcer. I got Johnny's autograph. So here's what happened. I got a chance to go out to California and saw a taping of Jeopardy. They tape, I think it's 4 shows a day. Then Alex is there on stage between, this and that. And they'll do a break here and there. If he muffs something, which is rare, man, watching this guy, jeez, if I only had the precision that Alex Trebek brought. When he occasionally muffed something, they'd have him recut it. And so when you had these stops and starts, anyway, you got Alex there on stage, and he was available to take some questions, and we shouted out some questions between the Jeopardy tapings. I'd like to tell you that I just asked him the most brilliant stuff in the world. I don't recall exactly what I asked him. You know me, I'm kind of a show-off here, right? A lot of people were a little shyer in the audience, but I boomed it right out. The one thing that I asked him that he thought was a good question, I asked him what he watched on TV, and that was a pretty interesting little discussion. Anyway, what I want to say about Alex Trebek, he didn't really like the term game show host. He preferred to describe Jeopardy as a quiz show. and thought of himself as a quiz master. The guy was just professional with a big P. And to see his life and to, I don't know, to be working, as we say, to be working for so many years, and at the end of that, to have a body of work, reading questions and telling people yes or no, and to make that into a body of work that absolutely elevated people's value of knowing stuff. So, Alex Trebek, yeah. One more, let's see here. One, I think I have another. Another point from Harley. Let me put, here's Harley Spiller again. If you just joined us, Harley was on To Tell the Truth. It was a game show in which we had two imposters and a real guy. And the real guy was Harley, who had the world's largest collection of Chinese menus. And Alex was hosting that that show. Anyway, one more lick from my friend Harley about Alex.
Hello, Gary. This is Harley, and I was sad to hear about the demise of Alex Trebek. During the 1990s, I was on a whole bunch of game shows and talk shows, and I met Maury Povich, excellent dude. I met Geraldo Rivera. Not nice. Downtown Julie Brown interviewed me, but it was an early remote thing, so I didn't really get to meet her. And was flown out to California and beautiful downtown Burbank and got to be on To Tell the Truth, which at one point was hosted by none other than Alex Trebek. I stumped the audience member who guessed which was my real occupation, collector of Chinese takeout menus, or inventor of the vibrating seatbelt that keeps you safe and slim at the same time. I had a day to practice that lie, and I knocked it out of the park with the slogan, which was buckle up and slim down. But Alex Trebek was real cool. He was real nice, gentle, kind, kind of sort of what you would guess from watching him on TV. And it was sad to hear about his departure. Brave guy, nice guy. Thanks for asking. And you, too, are brave and nice, Gary Lee Wright. Bye.
Harley Spiller, thanks, man. Alex Trebek, you know what? The best thing that I could tell anybody, you liked him on TV. He was more or less the same guy in real life. So, bye, Alex. Thanks for the work. This widecast was produced in Chicago. Hang on. Oh, my goodness gracious. This widecast was produced in Chicago by Natasha Rodriguez. And what's really funny is I don't have any music to go out of the show with. You know what? I knew if Trump didn't concede soon, the problems would just continue. See you tomorrow.